La 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 la.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, we would throw out a disclaimer probably in this one here. I mean, we've never had to throw out a disclaimer on the Letterman podcast before, but I think that, you know, a friendly, happily disclaimer. I mean, we're talking about a guy who came on stage and screamed, fuck you, at the top of his lungs. I think we'll probably say in this episode that there will be a disclaimer of some sort and go from there. If I had the technical wherewithal, which I wish I did, but I clearly do not. Where we could reference it every single time and then have the bleep that they did on the show, that would probably be more clever. As our viewing audience and listening audience knows, I am not nearly that clever.
I have no need for cleverness, Michael.
Well, okay, except it perhaps, but there's still nuance. I mean, that's the thing about the bit that I loved so much is that, okay, it seems like kind of low-hanging fruit. You've got somebody on network TV that comes on and swears, but it was more nuanced than that, and it was more clever than that. And that's what I think Letterman just had such a gift for doing, is taking ordinary things and kind of adding a layer of depth to it. We're going to get to that. I just want to make sure that we're okay. Okay. Jody Ebert, I thank you for coming on the Letterman podcast, by the way. This is crazy awesome to be talking to you right now. I'm extremely excited to dive into this very, very cool character that appeared on The Late Show, I believe, 2006 to 2012. Do I have it right?
Yes, I was on the last show of 2012, I think, talking about how the Mayan calendar said the world was going to end, and fuck you.
We're going to get to all of the appearances, but the Walter and Company just put out a very cool little compilation of I think it's maybe 2/3. I have in my notes here 18 total appearances. I believe they showed 12 of them on the official channel there. Is that right? Is that accurate?
You know way more than I do about it, Mike. Yeah, it's one of those things where you try not to be too impressed with yourself by right. knowing how many times you did it, or, you know, watching them all the time, or, you know, that sort of thing. I had done enough stuff before Letterman came yeah. around that I knew that would only lead down a bad path of thinking too much of myself.
You're preaching to the choir, sir. I 100% know there is folly, only folly, in being impressed with yourself with anything. I certainly can relate to that. There's no impressiveness about what we're doing here either. I get it. I totally understand. But at the same time, it's funny when that's the case. This is one of my favorite bits on The Late Show ever, because to me it was a throwback to late night. We're going to get into this kind of stuff here in a minute, but I just want to take a beat to say, you know, we've got you, who is a performer here, a writer. You've done commercials and things like that as well. I mean, you've done all sorts of different projects. I need to know the genesis of how this happened. Where, when, you know, if 06 was your first appearance, and I've got a list of them here, in 06 there were quite a few of them, and then they just were kind of put in as salt and pepper along the way for the next 6 years or so.
I think what they liked to do was get to the point where people forgot
yes.
that it was a bit.
Yes.
So it was new to people every time. And I actually loved that. You know,
yeah.
I thought that was great. And there was probably only one time where I was in the audience where I was doing it and someone said, you know, loud, "Oh my God, that's the fuck you guy." And thank God they were on Dave at that point, because I looked at them like they were insane. I was like, what are you doing? This isn't a show about me. It's a show about him, first of all.
Oh, okay. I love that you said that. Because at the end of the day, I think that that is the secret that most of the people who came on and did these bit parts, these little salt and pepper, like I say, these nuanced little bits that's the thing. You know, you suddenly had the spotlight on you, but it always came back to his response afterwards, either after you walked off stage or after whatever. It's a show about him, and it's a show that highlights him, not the person who, and I think about like Art Kelly, who played, you know, Mike Singletary, you know, he's also, you know, the receptionist on Dave's Floor, people who played these very bombastic roles. It always came back to either the question or the reaction or whatever of, you know, the greatest ad libber, off the cuff ad libber, some would say, in history, the history of broadcasting, and they didn't make it about themselves. And you just right there at the very beginning of this conversation encapsulated this thing. Was that always the thought, or did you evolve into that along the way?
What I always thought about it was that I was being the straight man for Dave. I was giving him a very long setup to tell the joke at the end, right?
Yeah.
You know, I think the first one was, you know, I won $63,000. And at the end of that, he was like, that's not really fuck you money. And like at that moment, I knew what I had to do
you know,
each time, which was just set him up.
Yep.
Right. And react to what he did as well.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Without doubt. Okay. So that was actually one of my questions that I had here today. So the first one was the $63,000. And then, you know, after you come and do your very, you know, dramatic move and you leave, and then he just kind of looks around and he's looking at the camera. Well, that's not really fuck you money, is it? And that was the line. Now, again, with Dave, you almost never know, unless he wants you to know, if one of these lines is pre-written, because his delivery is so spot on, or if it's straight up off the cuff, like on panel sometimes when these spontaneous moments happen, equally clever lines come out of his mouth. Just, you know, we've had Tom Dreesen and Jeff Allman on here, and they've talked about, they've known him for years. They say, oh, he's the funniest guy ever. Like, it just comes out so fast. That particular line that you just referenced there, was that a pre-written line?
No.
Wow. Wow. So you had no idea. So you're walking off stage. Do you hear him say that? Or is it in the playback afterwards that you, that line?
No, you're right off stage.
Yep.
Like right off stage.
Yeah.
You are very close by when he does something like that. And they always keep you around.
Right.
In case he wants to call you back for some reason.
Which he did in one of the clips. Yeah, he did that for you.
That was the one that was literally right before the writers were going to go on strike.
Yeah.
And, I'm not obviously speaking for Dave, but I don't think he was sure he was going to come back if it was a long writer's strike, right? So he was literally just being nice to me, telling me that he loved the bit I was doing. And I was so touched, I didn't actually say anything.
I love that.
I probably should have been like, said fuck you very affectionately back to him. But I for the only time, basically, during the whole thing, froze.
Okay, this is I'm so damn grateful that you just said that, because I was this was one of the questions that I was teetering on asking you over the weekend, that particular one when you came back out, and he said I love you, and you just kind of did one of these, and I tell you this, you giving him that smile, like, I mean, you want to call it breaking, you want to call it whatever it was, you were being genuine. Like, you could tell, because if I were in that role and Dave looked and said that to me, I'd kind of done the same thing. Like, it just, holy cow. And then I thought about it and I thought, oh, I wonder if, because when the gentleman, and I keep forgetting his name, the guy who played Lyle, the intern, a very similar kind of a character in the sense, would come out, interrupt the show, disrupt the flow. Dave would be off the cuff. And then every once in a while, Dave would go off script and you could tell. And it's like, okay, is this room to ad lib here? Is this is this something where, you know, there's a window here, what's going to go in that window? And I was going to ask you if, other than that time, were there any other even opportunities for you to ever ad lib, or was this something where it was always pretty tight as a drum and the randomness of it was going to be Dave's reaction? And that was a gift as a performer that you got to kind of open up as a present after the presentation.
Well, here's how it went down.
Please.
The first time I did it, they said, you know, Dave doesn't like it when you improv.
Okay.
So don't change what's written. And I said, okay, that seems very, very reasonable.
Oh, yeah.
And the first thing they wrote for me was essentially a monologue, to which he was going, uh-huh, whatever, and then doing the tag. The second time I was going on, they had written a more back and forth thing between us.
Yep.
And I was basically practicing it backstage, like, to be letter line perfect.
Yep.
And the guy who was miking me, who was a sweet man.
Do you remember who that was?
I feel like the biggest cad right now.
Why?
I think his name was,
it's a Bob. Long time ago, man.
He mic'd me for 6 years, you know. I think his name was Bob.
Okay. No, we'll find out. Don't you worry about that. It's all good.
You worry about who was miking me.
Yeah.
But he said to me, you know, he's not gonna do the lines exactly as they're written. And I said, no, I didn't know that. You know, I've been told very specifically that not to deviate. And he's like, that's gonna probably change on you. He's like, you know, try to stay tight to it, but he's probably gonna do something different. And that was sort of the way it went. I tried to mold what I was supposed to be doing into what he was doing.
Right.
And he did, over time, he became aware that I wasn't going to, like, when he started screwing around with me.
Yeah.
that it wasn't going to make me lose where we were.
Yeah.
And that just sort of encouraged him to do it more.
Right. Because he knew that you were ice that wasn't going to break on him. He could now start dancing a little bit and doing his stuff because he's on the ice. And I want to pull an example of that. When he used your name, because he didn't use your name for a long time, like, he would throw things out like, oh, yeah, you work here, right? Or, oh, this or oh, that. But one time he actually threw your first name out there. It was the last time
I did it.
Was that the last one?
Yeah. He said, you're Jody, right?
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, that's my name. and that ended up actually being the last time I did it. And that's a pretty long back and forth between, you know, I was always supposed to grab his attention, right?
Right.
If I was a guy in the audience, if I was a guy that worked for him, if I was a guy he shot with water on the street, when I came on to do the bit, I had to catch his attention.
Yes. Yes.
And that specific time, that last time,
yep,
he hung me forever, and you don't see it. They cut a lot of it. It was basically, I got to the point where I was actually worried he wasn't going to do the pit with me.
Oh man.
It was the only time that I was scared that was going to happen, because he did it with me for so long.
And you're going, hey, 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 is that really it?
And he'd be like, and he turned away and started to talk to Paul again.
Yeah.
And he did it, like, you see it on the thing maybe two times, and he probably did it six or seven times. But that was, you know, that was the... it's sort of nice,
yeah,
as a comedian,
yep,
or doing a comic bit, when the person you're working with, and you know, I admired Dave a lot before I was ever on the show.
Good. Yeah, you're getting to my questions, you know, here. This is good.
I before I was ever on the show,
yep,
he was not an idol, because I didn't want to be a host, but someone whose comedy I appreciated greatly.
Yeah.
And to have him like trust me enough to mess with me,
yep,
was a compliment, you know. It to me was a big compliment every time he did it.
We're gonna get back to that. Now that you and I have done in my opinion anyway, for maybe a dozen folks out there, we've done a masterful job of teasing how this all began and all that. Now it's time, I think, to go back to the beginning and say, okay, how did you get the gig? You were already doing commercials and things like that up to this point, before you got the first one, right? Is that the order of events of your career? Yeah.
No, that's true. I'd done little parts on television.
Yeah.
I'd done national commercials that were on for years.
Yes.
I mean, the truth about it,
yep,
is that I was friends from actually childhood with the Stengel brothers, who were the head writers at Letterman for something like 17 years, I think.
Are you still friends with them?
Am I still friends with them? Yeah.
They're on my hit list, by the way. There are a couple of the writers that we've had. I mean, don't get me wrong. We've had Young and O'Donnell and Weiner. We've had a bunch of writers, Gerard Mulligan, on the show. But those two guys, I'd love to have those two guys on. And actually, as someone who knows them, do you think it'd be better to have them both on at the same time? Yes. Or would that be the way to go, right?
No, that would be the way to go.
Okay.
They are funny apart, even funnier together.
And you went to school with them?
Yeah, I went to high school with both of them.
Oh, my gosh.
Same class with Justin, and 2 years older than Eric is. But I had also done, they early on had a comedy review, sketch comedy review thing that they did at the West Beth in the city. And I had done that,
right,
with them. So I'd done comedy with them, as well. That was kind of a cool thing, because, you know, many of the people who write New York comedy came,
yep,
out of this thing, and, you know, some people that have become mildly famous in the business, Beth Littleford, who's like a Disney mom person now, and Andrew Daly, who was on what was it, Mad TV for a long time,
yep,
and has done a bunch of commercials and a bunch of television
Hey man, when it comes to the arts, success is in the eye of the beholder. Like, I mean, again, I've got a kid who's in the arts and he's making a living at it. And that's the whole thing, is if you got work, if you can do it, whatever level it is. Because I mean, you know, you think about artists, they've got this thing inside them and it wants to come out so badly. If you can do that on any level, with any consistency whatsoever, doesn't matter the money, you're winning. And that's the whole thing. Like, to know, so to be cultivated around folks who actually get to stay artists along the way, that's a victory right there in this time. Putting art and commerce together can be very difficult, but at least that there's work to be done. Those boys, they went far, and I love the fact that as they progressed in their career, they also didn't forget people that they came up with and were comrades with along the way. How did this role end up in your lap? They knew you were performing, they knew they could count on you, all that kind of stuff, but how did it come up?
Well, I, and again, this could be completely, well, not all of it's going to be apocryphal, but some of it could be apocryphal. basically, they had had people we know on it, are on the show. Yep. Already. I had aggressively begged to be on the show.
Awesome. Oh, that's
great. I say, please put me on the show. And they kind of both said, listen, we're waiting for the right thing. Yeah. We want to do something good for you. We yeah. don't want to give you something stupid and unmemorable to do. And I said, honestly, please just put me on the show.
That's so great. I love hearing this. I do this show because of that attitude. Like sometimes if you want something so badly and you just go and ask for it. I host a men's mental wellness podcast too. And I mean, I've talked to all sorts of, you know, life coaches and counselors and therapists, and there's so many men out there who have these heart desire type things. And they don't act on it. And it literally, I swear to God, Jody, it's pent up stuff in many men that come out in heart attacks and strokes and violence and all these things, because they just don't ask for what they're looking for. And I just love that you just are like, no, I want this. I want to do this. It would be so much fun. Boys, you can make it happen. You're key holders, you're gatekeepers. You can make this happen. Was there times where you would ask them periodically, your friends? Clearly you can ask, you can push the boundaries a little bit then, you know, because you're friends for life. They know you know them. Were there times where you thought they were just giving you a line where it's like, oh, they're just pushing me off, they're just putting me off? Or did you know, no, they got me. They got me.
No, those are two people that I've always known have my back.
Oh, that's awesome.
I mean obviously we're friends, but yeah, them and their whole family honestly have always been wonderful, very kind to me.
Awesome.
But I continued to beg, and they yeah. continued to be like, it'll happen. At some point they put me on, they were doing something where it was like interesting audience stories, right?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And they only had two interesting audience stories and they needed a third. And they sure. were like, Jody, you did this, you had this funny thing happen to you. You know, you did this national commercial for Amstel Light.
Yep.
Right. Where you were, you were dancing and, you know, and showing off your chubby physique, basically. and then the Amstel company, along with the people who produced the commercial, basically figured out a loophole by not showing my face to not pay me for what was clearly a lead role in this thing. So they asked me to come on and talk about that. You know,
that's a real life story.
It's a real life story. They asked me to come on and tell a real life story
that they would punch up somehow, some way. Yeah, it would be.
Well, yeah, no. And I, you know, I mean, I think they suggested ways I could go with it, but they didn't tell me what I had to do.
Sure.
I did the bit, and at the end, Dave put his, you know, arm around me and was like, you know, that's a bummer, kid, or whatever he said, and then, you know, walked away right after it. And, you know, a bunch of the people there came up to me, like a bunch of the people who worked there, and they're like, he doesn't usually touch people in the audience because he's worried, you know, that someone will be like, happy to meet him. They'll like hug him in the middle of it or something. They're like, he must have really liked you or trusted you. We're not sure, but it's very cool that he did that to you.
Yeah, Tom Dreesen has talked about how the way to get a rise out of Dave is that he'll go up to him and hug him. And I mean, he's been his lifelong friend since the Comedy Store. We've talked about this on the show a couple of times, how, yeah, Dave, not known for being a hugger. But that being said, extremely empathetic. And this is a beautiful little example of that. Would that have been, Jody, the first time that you ever met Dave or had an encounter with Dave? Was that time number one?
That was the first time. And it wasn't,
and if
really,
your
you know,
was, appearance was 06, would it have been before, like,
no,
05?
It was definitely before that. Maybe, you know, honestly, it may have been 2004.
Okay, yeah. Yeah,
I honestly don't know, though.
No, again, no, that's cool. That's cool. But it gives good frame of reference that it's at least, you know, this is where this is all starting to brew a little bit. But yeah, your first time meeting him, it's an audience shot. One of the audience shots where he goes into the audience, interviews you. And then at the end of the interview, cameras are off. He's like, hey, kid, that's too bad happened to you.
While the cameras were still on.
No kidding. Oh, OK. Yeah. Don, Walter. Hey. We got an origin story of the fuck you guy. We got a prequel. Let's try and find that.
Know that it was a prequel, but after that, I continued to ask them. And I honestly think that, and again, I'm not speaking for anybody.
No.
But I honestly think they gave me the F you guy to just shut me up, basically, to get me to stop asking. I think what happened behind the scenes was, usually when it's supposed to be someone who works for Dave.
Yes.
Like, you know, sue the customer is sue the customer, you know?
Yeah. Oh, sue him. Absolutely.
Pat is Pat. Biff is Biff. They're the... do the jobs that they're supposed to be doing, right?
Yes.
So it's rare-ish that it's an actor doing it.
Yes.
But in this case, I think it was like, well, we need someone who can go from normal to enraged in, you know, 60 seconds and make it really real.
Yes.
You have anybody you think, boys, do you have anybody you think can do this?
Yeah.
And I think they said, we got just the guy for you.
This is really good. It's a good segue for many, many, many reasons. I'm going to comment on that. And then we're going to do a commercial. And again, my favorite part of this show. Oh my God, my favorite part of the show, Jody. I love reminiscing about Letterman. I love talking about these things, but my favorite part of the show is getting an unwitting guest, not unwilling, but unwitting, to be part of a commercial when they had no idea. And this is a professional commercial actor here. So this is exciting. But the comment, I just got a comment on what you just said, because I think part of the secret sauce with Dave was that you never knew. And right back to late night, you go back and you see, like we like to say on the show here, he destroyed the fourth wall and invited us all in to become part of the production. And the people that you saw most of the time, I would say 75, maybe even more, probably 90% of the time, the folks that he interacted with behind the scenes were really folks that were behind the scenes. But then you'd get, you know, whether it was folks who worked with Chris Elliott along the way from the beginning, or Lyle the Intern's a good example later on, because I think you and Lyle had very similar kind of an energy to you. He would bring in a professional, and it would have to be a professional. It would have to be. He melded that so well with the "Is This Anything" a bit, because you fit right into the "Is This Anything." And then suddenly, oh shit, there's the guy. Same with the guy with the suit. When you were in the suit, you got hit with the water, right? It's oh, it's okay. And suddenly, you know, the two have kind of merged. But so I love that you mentioned that. That is very, very cool. Because sometimes he would need somebody with some chops to do these things. And so now, that being said, this show, we have one sponsor on this show, on the Letterman podcast, but it's a doozy, of course. It's in my opinion, actually, I'll throw it out there. It's been pointed out by a couple insiders. One of the things that has given this show legitimacy is we are brought to you in part by the Hello Deli. Rupert G and the Hello Deli is one of the sponsors of this show. I love the reaction of the guest when they see that. Rupert and company, we just appreciate you so much. Nestled within the womb of the Ed Sullivan Theater is the Hello Deli. If you're in the New York area, go get some soup and sandwiches from Rupert and May. They're happy to serve you. I swear that there are some days where there is no one that takes more selfies than Rupert G. He is literally like the word kind turned into a human being. He's so awesome. But also, if you ever want to get Late Show with David Letterman merchandise, this mug, t-shirts, not this t-shirt. This is a staff t-shirt, which I've been so fortuitously betrothed, but other t-shirts, Rupert t-shirts, all sorts of stuff. He packs them himself, ladies and gentlemen. If you're in Iowa or Washington or Bangladesh, doesn't matter. Go to hello-deli.com and Rupert will pack these t-shirts with care and love. And if you ask really nicely, he might add onions to your order as well. Did you ever eat at Rupert's? Did you ever go to see Rupert?
I had several sandwiches that fueled my fuck you-ism from Rupert's Deli. And, you know, honestly, I'm not sure Rupert had any idea who I was, but I 100% knew who he was.
Oh, absolutely. You talk about a guy who fame doesn't change him, being seen by millions of people. And I think that's one of the reasons why Dave and company have such a good relationship with him. You know, in many respects, he was, I don't want to tell too many tales out of school, but he was in many respects a confidant or a counselor for these folks that worked with him and saw him every single day. But I think just like yourself, you know, Dave wanting to make sure that the ice was thick enough that he could dance on it. Rupert in his own way did the exact same thing for that staff and every bit a member of the family was Rupert G. I just love that is the sandwich shop outside of the Ed Sullivan Theater, that you've got this guy who's so even keel and straight ahead, but kind, such a nice man.
It's literally, like, if you go out the stage door, it's literally right there.
Yeah. And anyway, thank you for indulging the Letterman podcast in that, Jody. I'm
very happy to, actually.
that's the reaction. And I mean, that's the reason I keep it as a surprise, because everybody, when the reaction is so great, seeing the smile on the guest's face when I mention even his name and the fact that he's associated with, we love him. He's a good buddy. So anyway, I want to go back to the beginning here. So, because it's such a casual thing, but then it's not casual, because, okay, you know, Eric and Justin, that's great. But then suddenly it's like, oh, unions and shit and all the, and this is the part that I think our viewers, and we're going to go do a deep dive on this, because a lot of the viewing public doesn't understand the business of show. they don't understand that you know, the moment you become like, we started talking about it with folks who were production people who became characters on the show. Pat Farmer's coming on in a couple of weeks, and we're really going to go down the rabbit hole with him on this. And suddenly they're having to become part of the union, and these other elements or moving parts enter their life. You're buddies with these two prolific writers. And they're like, okay, you're going to come on the show. Did it get complicated in any way at that point? Or was it just like you had representation and you knew exactly what to do because you were a pro? Or was it different because of the personal thing here?
Well, if you're talking union.
Yeah.
I had been AFTRA, which is what Dave was on when I started.
Yep.
I'd been AFTRA for maybe 8 years at that point.
Yep.
And I'd been SAG for 5 years at that point. So the union stuff was nothing for me. It was no consideration whatsoever. I got right. my AFTRA card by being on All My Children.
Okay, so you were like a Lego piece that fit in just perfectly at that point. You were, it was very, very simple
that was,
for them.
That was not a hassle for anybody.
Right.
I was very used to cameras at that point. You know, I'd started, like, I did films that you would have seen in your health class when I was, I don't know, probably 14.
Sounds like a juicy role right there.
There, somewhere out there, there are pictures of me being, you know, the drug dealer at the high school, or doing first aid things, or, you know, like that kind of stuff.
You were the guy that led to negative peer pressure, or negative fronting, I believe was the word that it was when I was in school. You were that guy.
Yes, I in one of them played a coke dealer. There was one about the SATs that for some reason had, they wanted me to look like Alex P. Keaton. And I kind of did at that point. So they used me because of that originally, and then found out I was I could do a lot of different stuff. So this company used me. So by the time this rolls around, I'm used to doing things on camera. I'm used to doing live theater. The only thing I'm not used to is combining it.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
I had never done television live. Right. In Letterman, as probably everybody knows, is live to tape.
Yeah, but they made it like it was yeah, tight, no, like a but, drum.
Yeah, it was... no, but they, I, in the whole time I was there, I saw them go back one time when a light blew. That was the only time they didn't do it straight through.
Yep.
And you were talking about how good Dave is at improvising.
Yep.
There were times when I knew what was supposed to happen.
Mm-hmm.
On other people's bits, other things that I was there, and I knew it had gone horribly, horribly wrong.
Yeah.
But no one in the audience and nobody on TV ever knew that because he was so sharp. I sat backstage a couple times and was like, Oh my God. Like, how does a person do that?
Oh, that's fantastic. Thank you for saying that. I always talk about my one appearance with David's back there. Anyway, we can talk about it off camera because I mentioned it too many times on the show. That was a month before he retired. But I went in 04, 05 when Jim Carrey was on as well. I made the pilgrimage. And again, I try to explain it to people how when they fuck up, you just don't know. Like, you got to be paying such close attention, especially the way the theater is set up and how, you know, apparently it's a little bit different for Colbert now, but it was so, the set is removed a little bit from the audience. It's further back on the stage when it was Dave. And I mean, they were literally going through something and, that we screwed up. Okay. Yeah. Okay. We'll just take it right back here. Okay. And then he just starts again. And you don't even like, it's literally that fast. You don't even know that the screw up has happened. They keep recording, they keep doing their thing. And I've heard that things like the lights out that actually make them stop production, like what you're talking about. I heard those are the things that sometimes could make Dave a little bit persnickety. He did not like the technical difficulties whatsoever, because if there was a screw up, he loved to just kind of run through it. And it was just a wave on the ocean. We're just going to let that wave go. The next one is coming, and here we are, and we're back on again. And it was smooth as silk. He was such, again, the greatest broadcaster in history. He's not a comedian. He's not that. All of these things are tools that he has. But at the end of the day, a hard, fast, professional broadcaster who likes the professionalism that broadcasters like. And I think that's the secret. That's another part of the secret sauce with Dave.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you. I would heartily concur with your assessment of that.
So let's go back. Okay, so you had your one encounter. Not quite exactly. You keep hounding them, and suddenly this role comes up. How long before you actually did your first appearance as the fuck you guy, or the F you guy? Whatever you want, whatever we're calling it. Was that your name originally? Like, was that the name in the script? And how long before you actually got on stage and did it, did you know what the part was going to be?
The way it went down is, I think I'm remembering this correctly. Yeah. The way it went down is, Jody, can you be here by 3? We have this thing we want you to do. It should be fun.
Yep.
And I said, cool. Yes, I can be there by 3. They said, bring some clothing that's you.
Yep.
But you know, nice-ish. Don't be a schlub.
Kid. Probably no logos and things like that.
Standard
stuff.
Just come and you're right. Just come with some stuff. And I showed up. They gave me the script, and I did it like 2 hours later, 3 hours later, something like that. And I kind of. You know, nothing comes from nowhere, right?
Right.
So in my mind, doing it the first time, I kind of was channeling my inner Belushi.
Oh, you know? That's great.
Like that, if there was a comedian I wanted to be, and I never wanted to be a stand-up because it's a very difficult life, but I did want to be a sketch performer. I loved to make people laugh, so
yeah,
he was actually my idol, and I just sort of, I was like, if Belushi got this, what would he do?
Yeah,
and the answer is he would throw himself into it mentally and physically. He would not be doing it as a joke. He'd be doing it like as much rage as you could put into it. Yeah. Is what he would do. And that's what I did, right? I didn't know what the right thing was to do. And as far as I knew, this was going to be a one-off, right?
Right.
This was my one chance to blow the doors off the off the Ed Sullivan Theater. So I did what I thought would be good, and it turns out I was not the only person who thought it was good.
Absolutely.
And I from what I understand, and again, I am not speaking for him.
Nope.
But from what I understand, Dave enjoyed the bit from the beginning.
Yeah.
And that's sort of why I got to do it for, you know, almost 7 years. You know, it was, there was a kindness that the whole show showed me from top to bottom.
Yeah.
Almost from the beginning of me doing it. Like, the fact that the Stengels were kind to me was not a surprise.
No.
I knew they were gonna be. But the other people,
yeah,
from from like the late Michelle O'Callaghan, who did Dave's and Paul's makeup.
Yeah.
She went out of her way always to do mine as well. And sit there and talk to me and tell me stories about the show. Everybody was at least decent to me there. And when you're doing a show that is that quick.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is, you know, that's a hard thing. That's commitment.
Yes.
You know, to be kind to someone, to, you know, I'm really just an actor at that point and could be ignored and shoved backstage. And
yeah, you could be treated as a cog in the machine.
Yeah, I could be a cog in the wheel. And
yep,
after a certain point, it didn't feel like that. You know, the band was incredibly kind to me. You know, I was obviously a huge Belushi fan. So this fact that Tom Bones Malone.
We've had him on here and he's talked about John on this show. So, yes. Yeah,
right. The fact that he was talking to me and being kind to me in his amazing suits, you know, was that my 14-year-old self basically had a stroke right there, you know. You know, Will Lee, the bass player there. I've gone to see him do Fab Faux a bunch of times. He's literally walked out into the audience and given me the finger during their show. To the point where people have been there and been like, I've seen him do the show 20 times and never given anybody the finger. What did you do to him? You know, like that, you know, he texts me jokes still, like, and just for that, that kind of kindness, that kind of inclusion, that kind of familiness.
Yes.
I haven't ever found it any other place in this business, actually. You know, it is a business. It is show business.
Yep.
And when you're an actor, especially in film and television, you are only one of the important things. So generally it's like, shut up and do your job.
Yeah.
And if you don't do it as good as we thought you were going to do it, you might get cut or, you know, you'll never work in this part of the town again.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And to feel included in this larger, you know, 30-year family.
Yep. Institution by that point. Absolutely.
You know, that was something that made me feel better about myself and what I was doing than the other stuff had. You know, you leave acting school, sure, you're gonna do Lear.
Yeah.
And then you're the fat guy dancing in commercials.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
And that's not Lear. And you have to come to a certain accommodation with that, right? But this was almost fame. It was fame adjacent. Sure. On something that you knew to appreciate already.
Yeah.
Right? That something that you would have been watching kind of no matter what.
Yes.
But now you were on it, you know. Now, 10 years down the line, people still love what you did.
Yes.
Right? That is an incredible gift.
Yes.
To an actor or a comedian, or in this case, I guess you would consider me both. Although, again, I consider myself the straight man in this. So,
yeah, without a doubt, I'm so grateful that you just said all the words that you did, because I think there's so many of us in the Letterman enthusiast camp who would feel exactly the same way if we had a brush with the show somehow on camera. You know, the level of enthusiasm for Dave and company includes the family part. And I believe that is because right from the mothership, family was, and I've used that word so many times on here. And it's funny, whenever you try and compliment any of them, they deflect them. It doesn't matter who it is. It doesn't matter who it is. You try and compliment them, they deflect it. Why? Because that's what Dave did right from the very top. You know, there's a sentimentality that it's kind of an aw shuck sentimentality that doesn't, you don't lead with it, but it is right there, a consideration, kindness. These words have come up so often, and it doesn't matter how, you know, people's journeys ended, you know, because it is a business and that happens. And there are beginnings, middles, and ends that you don't sometimes know where they are until you have the benefit of hindsight. But along the way, though, those words that you just said have been expressed by so many members of this family. And I'm really grateful that you, who's been on 18 times, 19, I guess, with the other audience encounter where you came on there, you know, you got a chance to feel that as well. That is so, so cool. I want to get back to a little bit of the trivia stuff that people might be interested in. Again, a couple dozen of us. But so at this point in Dave's career in 06, I believe, if I have the timeline right, that's around the time where Dave started changing the way that he would be at rehearsals and things like that. Did you rehearse this every single time? Was yes. Dave ever part of the rehearsals? And then was there a time where he wasn't?
Every single time.
Yeah.
With several different people playing the part of Dave.
Was it ever Dave?
It was never ever, Dave. Okay. Ever Dave.
Okay. Do you remember who some of those people were?
Well, a lot of the time it was Eric Stengel, actually.
Nice. Oh, my God. How much fun? Okay, so hold on. Let me just, I got to stop you there. This is your buddy from school. And sitting behind Dave's desk, and you're there being a bombastic character, being your inner Belushi coming out. I mean, how cool was that, just as buddies? That must have been just like, I can't believe we're here. Like, how great was that?
It was great. It was great to see them on a regular basis too. Because when you do a job like that,
you're married.
You
to
don't them. Get to see your friends. Nope. As much as you would like. And during the period where you might see your friends,
yep,
you need to use that time to see your family.
Yeah.
Right? Because you're away from them a ton.
Yep.
And I hope, at least, I think it was nice for them too, because they were like, oh, we get to see Jody. He'll come up and hang out in the office for a little while, you know?
Yeah.
We'll talk about old times. We'll reminisce.
Awesome. That's fantastic.
Yeah, and they were, you know, they behind the scenes were trying to, you know, help this be even more than it is. And again, I don't think this is talking out of school, but they, the writers had written a long bit, recorded bit about where the fuck you guy came from.
Really?
Yeah. And the idea was it was going to be like, originally I think they wrote it with Charlie Rose in mind, like me sitting at a dark table, you know, with him doing that. And I'm guessing Charlie Rose told them that, you know,
yeah,
I would love to do stuff for Letterman, but maybe not this bit.
Oh, wow.
And I think that they had hooked Wolf Blitzer to do it with me, do the interview part with me. But then they were showing like these little clips of how the fuck you guy came to be, right? You know, showing me like arriving in New York, my first job at a theater in New York, and it was me handing out tickets. Enjoy the show, fuck you. Enjoy the show, fuck you. You know, then it was like me at a dentist's office, like with the, you know, all the dental stuff in my mouth, but still saying fuck you. It was me at a dry cleaner telling them to go fuck themselves.
You know what I love about this? I love this because it's not like you were the guy handing out the ticket and people being mean to you, and then it's suddenly exploding out of you in a rage finally later on. No, this has been there the whole way. And to me, that is a beautiful little left turn to convention, which is what the show is famous for. That's awesome.
And so my cool. Two favorite, and we shot all of my stuff that wasn't with Wolf. My two favorite parts of it were they had me go to this well-known, and I wish I could remember the name, Chinese restaurant, where they were famous for their Peking duck. And there were these Chinese waiters that were preparing the Peking duck for me.
Yep.
And they had one of the waiters teach me how to say fuck you in Mandarin. So I did fuck you in Mandarin. So I which I don't remember, but I love that. Then they were doing a bit where suddenly the fuck you guy now has his own sitcom. And I shot that and they were like, hey, we've got a part for Roommate. Is there anybody you want to do this? Right. And one of my good buddies who is, a talented stand-up comedian who eventually did Dave stand up, I think four times, a guy named Michael Somerville. I knew he wanted to be on the show badly. And I was like, oh, I want this guy to come on with me. And I got him the ability to stand on the Ed Sullivan stage, you know, like and for him at the time, it was unbelievably exciting. Yep. And to me, it was, and I'll use this phrase that hopefully people will understand it. For me, it was a mitzvah to be able to do it for him. And then, of course, he went on to be a Letterman comedian, a comedian that clearly Letterman enjoyed because he had him back four times. But that I was a little sad because what happened is the writer strike happened before we filmed the Blitzer stuff. And then it just sort of went off into the ether.
Oh my gosh.
But there is film of me somewhere doing all these little bits around New York City. All these fuck you related bits. And, you know, I mean, that was, I think, an attempt to move it into greater, things, yeah, to bigger things
to expand. Well, and I mean, there is so much to unpack here. We're going to take this, what you just said, and we're going to attach it to a guy by the name of Alan Coulter in a second here. But hold on, before we do that, I'm not looking at you right now, Jody, Walter, Don, Shecky. Where? Okay, is there film of this? If there is, boy, would that be a neat little addendum? I don't know. Addendum. I think it's addendum. That would be very, very cool to throw that out there. If we could. Oh my gosh, this is really, really neat hearing this. I gotta be very, very conscious of your time and whatnot, but I can't, in good conscience. I'm having a difficult time with words today. Word association day today. I can't, in good conscience, not talk about Alan Coulter, because your first time you come out and you say fuck you, you look at Paul and say it, and then you look over at Alan. Other than maybe one other exception, every single time after that, I think you guys get the rhythm of the bit, you get how it's going to go, and then there's the X factor, which is Mr. Alan Coulter, who, by the way, these pre-tapes that you're talking about, where Alan would start with a little something and then it would go into this this bit that has a lot of production associated to it and backstory and all that kind of stuff. This is right along something that would be done for Alan. My favorite part of the entire thing, other than maybe a couple of Dave's quips, was Alan's reaction. And I can't, I mean, we, Alan Coulter, rest in peace. I wish we could have had you on this show. And anytime I have a moment to celebrate that man, I love Big Red. his shock of he barely moved when you would scream it at him and give him a finger. He barely moved, but the reaction on his face was 1,000 words could be written on that. Subtle, less is more. I don't know what you would call that, but Alan's reaction was always just top shelf gold.
Yeah. Yes, I agree with you. And, most times I wouldn't talk to Dave around the thing.
Sure.
Very luckily, I got to speak with him several times, you know?
Awesome.
Paul, I probably talked to her slightly more than that.
Yep.
But every time I was on the show, I talked to Alan. And I don't know, his on-screen persona was sometimes weird, sometimes perverted.
You know what, Jody? It was anything they wanted him to be. That's the thing about Alan. That was the secret sauce. He could do whatever they needed at that moment and do it well.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
But the truth about the man, at least to me, off the screen, was that he was an incredibly kind, generous human being who, again, you know, didn't have to be nice to me, didn't have to be inclusive to me, but did. You know, he did include me all the time. He did talk to me all the time. He did treat me well all the time.
Yep.
You know, I keep saying people, but, you know, Eddie Brill was wonderful.
Guest on this show twice. In fact, the second episode is about to go this week. I'm putting you up because of that. Eddie Brill Part 2 comes up here. I wish I could go back. Eddie Brill Part 3, we're going to talk about you because this is really cool. I was going to ask about Michael as well. So anyway, as you've been doing this, Eddie, his name has come up in my head a few times. What a sweet man Eddie is. He and I bond over hockey. And again, he's turned into a friend after this as well. Similar experience for you. A few encounters here and there, and suddenly these people are becoming your friends. I'm going through the same thing. Anyway, I apologize to cut you off there. Isn't Eddie a peach?
Yeah. No, I mean, he was incredibly kind to me. He is masterful at telling stories about comedy. And I am, I'm a comedy nerd. I'm especially a stand-up nerd because it's something, you know, that I can't do.
Yeah, it's a mystery. It's a beautiful, beautiful mystery watching these people do that. I totally agree.
I have done sketch.
Yep.
I have hosted live events in front of large groups of people.
Yep.
And had to be funny. But, you know, stand-up is always something that I've found amazing and scary.
Yeah.
And his, you know, his stories around that were always great, you know, and his inside baseball on stuff was always, you know, interesting to listen to.
Yeah.
You know, and the truth is, even the people who sort of gave me crap on Dave's show.
Yeah.
Did it in this wonderful, like, sort of little brother way. Like, Biff would constantly give me crap, but he would also be really kind to me.
Let's quantify that. What's an example of him giving you crap, so to speak? Because we all know that Biff is kind-hearted as well, and all he wanted was to have a good show, but at the same time, he was just this, anyway, so what, quantify that a little bit.
I think he's naturally slightly cantankerous.
No, somebody on the Late Show who works for David Letterman that might be slightly cantankerous a little bit? No. Again, another attribute that seems to be there in the mythos or in the fabric of
yes
group.
So mildly cantankerous. So yeah. He would be like, you know, oh, I can't believe they're having you back again.
but that's like a warm hug. That's like a welcome back. That's like you're part of the crew. Like
haven't they beaten this dead horse enough or you know something like that.
That's great.
Number one, and I've been directed by a lot of people at this point.
Yes.
Number one favorite director of all time for me is Jerry Foley. And I don't know if anybody has any idea how much he had to do with the show, but it was
a lot. He's coming on our show very soon.
Him my love. Tell him he's still my favorite director.
Oh, he's going to love to hear that. That's awesome. I use the word awesome a lot because this is just great. This is awesome. That's fantastic to hear that.
He would be like, all right, Jody, you got to hit your mark. You got to do this. You got to do that. And then I would rehearse like we were talking before. And most of the time he would be like, that's brilliant. Maybe you want to go over here. Maybe you want to go over there. But there were a couple of times where he went, Jody. And I would go, yes, Jerry. Could you do that again? And this time, would you try not to suck?
Now that's an award. Still my favorite right notes.
my favorite notes I ever got. Could you do it one more time? And this time, would you try not to suck?
Oh.
And I hope that is an inside baseball on him too, because doing it in a funny, inclusive, brothery kind of way. He wasn't doing it to be like, you suck, kid, get out of here.
I'm going to throw this out there and say he's probably trying to get you to loosen up or something like that, or no, probably put a smile on your face, and he's just doing it to, because Mr. Foley was certainly known for that, you know, and again, the guy took over for Hal Gurney. I mean, you talk about a big pair of shoes to fill. Not only did he fill them, but he kept them the rest of the way. I'm so grateful for this. Again, conscious of your time, you know, we did a good job, I think, setting the table about how, you know, you are this professional in the arts that came in and filled this role, a cult role in again, we're broken record, the greatest body of broadcasting work in history. You are a cult member of that crew, of that family. But that being said, you've got a lot of Jody Ebert outside of this as well. I mean, writer and I mean, write, produced, directed a short on your own, screenplays, things like that. Let's talk about that a little bit here before we take it home.
Yeah, well, post Dave, I don't know whether the right way to put this without depressing people is my life went a little bit to shit.
Yep.
My first marriage ended poorly.
Yep.
I lost some of my representation within the business, because of being more picky and choosy about what I was doing.
Yeah.
Because I had a young family. My late father was, you know, sort of dying all at the same time, kind of.
Yeah.
And like I said before, the Stengels were my friends outside of this, and Justin specifically knew that I was going through hell, so he was calling up and checking on me and finding out, you know, how I was doing. Mm-hmm. And one day I was leaving an audition and he called me and he was like, oh, you're auditioning for, oh, that's good. You know, I'm glad. And I just started talking about my life to him. And, you know, making him laugh, making him not cry, but
no, but hitting
like
him in
understanding
the feels.
My pain, but still making him laugh. And he said, I know you're looking for another way to involve yourself, to get creative. He's like, I think maybe you should do stand up about this. And I said, I don't want to be a stand up just because it's a miserable life for the first 10 years of it. And it would take me away from my family. And he said, well, then maybe you should write. And when the head writer at Letterman says you should write.
Yeah, you listen.
You should write.
Yeah.
So I started doing that and fell in love with it in a way that I had not experienced with acting. I loved acting. I loved what I was doing, but it was... I don't know. It was a creative process that I didn't completely understand starting it. And I essentially taught myself to do it based on what I had done for the, you know, 30 some odd years before that.
Yep.
And almost right away, like I started putting my work in the film festivals and, contests for screenwriting, and I pretty much right away started winning awards for it.
Wow.
Which, you know, I I don't want to belittle the work acting that I did, but I didn't win any awards for it.
It's a different animal though, too. I mean, yeah, they're two different disciplines. They're two different, but at the same time, both are at least expressing who you are and releasing some of the pressure, getting it out. And if you're writing about things that you know, Stephen King talks about that. The first thing he says is write what you know, and then, you know, embellish it, fuck around with it, do all that kind of stuff. Yeah. It must have been extremely cathartic for you to do that, and then to receive awards for it, the gratification of your catharsis. Not that it makes going through what you went through worth it, but at the same time, it at least turned a negative into a positive.
Yeah, no, and it didn't get me over any of it, but it did allow me to view it from the inside, mm-hmm, and then the outside.
Yeah.
You know, it allowed me to see it from a couple of different angles. It allowed me, it taught me to be honest in a way that I hadn't learned to be as an actor, right?
Wow.
Like give of myself in a way that maybe I never was going to as an actor, just right, because of the type of actor I was, you know, because I was essentially a character actor.
Yes.
You know, I was essentially what Chris Farley used to call fatty fall down.
Yep.
Now I'm probably 30, 40 pounds lighter than I was and everything, but the last one I did. So I'm not quite fatty fall down anymore.
Well, the thing about that too is that Chris the thing about that though, if you don't mind me interjecting there,
no,
I think we both know, you know, you brought up Belushi, Canadian. So John Candy obviously comes up into the conversation, Chris Farley. Okay. The thing about that is Chris Farley is oversimplifying in diluting in the grandest way possible. To sum up, because really what was going on in the back, because Chris Farley could make you laugh by being fatty fall down, but then could make you cry a second later because of the emotion that he would bring into things. And I just, he summed it up, but at the same time, there's a lot more depth to fatty fall down than what's on the surface and how it's presented.
Yeah, no, and my favorite bit of his was the Chris Farley show where he's, you know, we were kind, where he was like, I'm so stupid. What am I doing? What the, you know, or look at Paul McCartney and go, is the love you make in fact equal to the love you take, you know?
Well, see, like, there it is. I've been accused by a couple folks of being a little Chris Farley-ish on this show. Oh, that's awesome. Saying, oh, remember when this happened? Oh, that was awesome. You know, like, yeah. But then that question comes out and hits you from left field. And it's the depth that suddenly shows up, not saying that I have that kind of depth here. I'm not saying, I'm talking about Mr. Chris Farley on SNL. But yes, that genius stuff would come out. And it only comes from pain many times as these things. And when you talk about your projects here and these things that are dear to your heart that you put out to the universe, but also the catharsis within, this is a very, very cool turn that I think a lot of folks who tuned in, who, if they're still with us, first off, what's wrong with you? You know, you got things to do. No, but second, I think that this is a very cool conversation. And I love hearing this stuff. How accessible are some of these things? I know they're award-winning, but that does not necessarily mean widely distributed. And again, that's the artist.
It does not mean widely distributed at all.
Right.
The screenplays are, of course, available to anybody who would like to see them, make them, represent them.
What are they called? Where do you find them, Jody?
Well, you would find them from me.
Okay.
You know, you could find me very easily at wjody@gmail.com.
There we go.
Which is my real email address.
Can I throw that in the description or do we not want to do that?
What?
Can I throw that in the description of this broadcast? Or
oh, yeah, no, absolutely. Okay, we're cool. We're past the point, I think. Early on in doing the FU guy, I got a couple of death threats, but I think we're past that now.
Why would you treat Dave that way? Don't you treat Dave? Don't you dare. Alan Coulter is a national treasure.
If you had any idea, like, I generally don't deal with my own stuff. You know, I don't watch my own stuff a lot or whatever.
Yeah.
But right in the early points of me doing this, CBS, Worldwide Pants, put my stuff on YouTube.
Yeah.
And it was early on in things going viral.
Yep.
So I was getting a couple million clicks on my stuff.
Yep.
So I would look at that to be like, they really like this one, 1.5 million on this one.
Yeah.
And then for a little while, I went down the rabbit hole of looking at the comments.
Oh boy. Uh-oh.
And it was 50% almost down the line. And you can't find this anymore because they took those particular ones off of YouTube. But almost right down the middle, it was people being like, why didn't they stop that guy? Why didn't they? And an equal amount of people being like, how fucking stupid are you? This guy is an actor. If he wasn't, the New York police would have shot him. There'd be people, and one of the death threats I got was on there, like, let's get together and go kill this guy.
Oh my gosh. Really?
Yeah. To which I was like, I spoke to the program and was like, this is concerning me a little bit. You know, I have small children at home. And they were like, don't worry. We looked at this and this is the kind of nut who's not going to do anything. But I had someone email me about how they were going to come and get me.
Oh, no.
The thing I found most amusing about that was to get my email, the email that they used.
Yeah.
They had to find out my name.
Yep.
They had to look up and find that I was an actor, and my representation.
While simultaneously suspending their disbelief because I was still hell-bent on
guy.
This. Yeah.
I didn't get. I didn't get so much that at one point I used one of my YouTube things to be like, this dude is an actor. He's literally on these two commercials right now. You can watch him. Because I didn't want people to want to kill me, you know? And I understood that those people that were doing that were way more invested.
To say the least.
In the reality, non-reality of it,
yeah,
then, you know, I felt comfortable dealing with. But yeah. I think we're almost at the point now where the only people who care are the people who loved it.
Yes.
You know? And there are plenty of people, you know, will be like, oh, actor, what did you do? Have you done anything? And I always say everything else first. And they're like, oh, yeah, no, I don't know. You know, I'm like, really? Heineken commercial I had on for like 7 years. It was on every New York sports channel all the time. But no, you don't remember that at all, huh? And then the last thing I'll say is I did Dave David's show for 6 years. And to a person, everybody's excited by that, yeah. Right? And some people are like, oh, you know, I don't know that bit. But if they knew the bit,
right in the heart, right in the heart.
Person,
yep.
Almost live, they're like, oh, I loved it. I love you. I, you know. But it was such a, it was an anonymous character in a yeah. way, right? There are literally people that I knew from places who found out and they were like, oh, I'm an enormous fan of that bit.
Yes.
I didn't realize it was you.
Yep.
You know, my, I hope she'll forgive me for saying this, but my second wife, my yep. present wife, was actually a huge fan of the bit before she ever met me.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's a little, as a husband, that's an ace of spades that's in your pocket. That is a very, very charming notion.
She's less of a fan of me now. Just
well, and I think clear. As a current husband as well, I also understand that sometimes that ace of spades, there's a bunch of diamonds on the board, and I get that as well. So you know, I understand where that's coming from. So I love this conversation. I hate that we have to kind of move towards the ending. WilliamJodyEbert.com is yes. where
you can get in touch right? with me there. Actually, or you can get in touch with me at wjodye@gmail.com.
Okay. That is fantastic. We're gonna put that in the description of this episode as well. I'm so grateful. So are you still watching? Do you consume the Netflix? Do you consume Dave and his new show that he's doing the long form now? Have you ever watched any of the new Letterman stuff?
Well, to be completely honest, I've watched all of it right away whenever it came on.
Amazing.
Even the people where I was like, I am going to fucking hate this, you know?
Oh, we could do an hour on this, by the way, sir. But anyway, keep going.
Yeah. Yep. No, even again, I'm not belittling what they've done artistically, but I find the Kardashians to not excite me, right?
Well, yeah, I don't but think you're talking... there. To be fair, I don't think that you, sir, are their demo either.
Yes, no, I'm definitely not their
but demo. How compelling was that episode? Like, yeah. Oh my gosh.
No, and I went into it being like, I'll probably turn this off after the first yep. 10 minutes.
Yep.
And I didn't.
Yep.
And I think Kanye West as an artist has done some incredible stuff.
Yep.
But as a human, I wasn't a big fan. But again, watched it and was like, oh my God, he's yep. making him talking to Lizzo.
Yeah.
I didn't know and then was in love with after him talking to her. And then people who I really like had strong feelings for already, like Dave Chappelle.
It was, oh my gosh.
You know, you yep. want to talk, like, I know he's run up against some, you know, problems out there yep. in the woke world recently, but
yep.
the man is inarguably a comic genius. So if you love comedy, you don't have to love everything that he's ever said.
Yeah.
But he is undeniably a genius at the art form.
Absolutely. I love, again, believe it or not, ladies and gentlemen, no pre-interview. This is stuff that all comes up organically. I could not agree more with everything that you've said. I think if my next guest is serving a purpose, I believe what Dave is a master at doing is being curious, and people inside the show, people who worked with them for 30 years and I have talked to me about this particular fact, the fact that Dave is so good at being curious, and it's the curiosity of the, for lack of a better term, the everyman or the every American, where it's like, okay, you know, Billie Eilish is blowing up. Well, I'm just going to go in there and I'm going to try and figure out and articulate, not by just asking, well, why are you blowing up? But I'm going to show everybody why that's happening. But then still for his audience that are already there, top comics of the day, like Chappelle, Seinfeld interviewing him, interviewing Dave, and them having a really nice, you know, Julie Louis-Dreyfus and these other folks that are also like, he's done such a, him and his team, his very, very small team, because Dave is driving the bus, have done a really good job of picking who they want to be on that show and to highlight. And it's a broad spectrum that, in my opinion, brings everyone together, generations, cultures, styles, all of these things, and does a really good job, especially if a season is four episodes long, but there's Iron Man, and then okay, there's someone with some social conscience as well. There's somebody from a culture that is the exact opposite from Iron Man. So we finished these shows, most of these shows, by asking a very similar, the same question. If there were a couple of people, I always use the word three, now we're kind of evolving it to, if there were a few people who you would love to see Dave sit down with and have as a guest on My Next Guest, Jody, who would they, anyone, Jeff, off the top of your head?
Musically, I think Amy Lee from Evanescence, I'd like to see. He had her on the show, and I thought that she was, I talked to her a bunch backstage, and I thought she was a really, not realizing it was her actually, because without makeup, I didn't even know it was her. I just spent a bunch of time talking with her about music. Thought she was the PR person for the band.
With lots of depth.
Like, hey, Amy, we got to go rehearse.
And I was like, that's cool. That's very, very cool.
But I've always found her to be an interesting character, and that band to be very interesting. Actor wise, I honestly don't know actor wise who he hasn't done that I'd love to see, except maybe, you know,
and it could be someone he's done, it could be just someone that, you know, who would you like to see him have a conversation with in 2022? You know,
I think De Niro would be interesting in maybe a Curmudgeonoff at this point.
Yeah.
See who is going to be the most curmudgeonly around around the thing. I'd honestly be interested if he interviewed, you know, like Barbara Gaines.
Yes, we've had like a lot of folks on here
been around
about that. Yeah,
she's been around him for a very, very long time.
Yes.
And I guess lastly, I'd be, and I have no idea whether this would even be a possibility. I don't have any idea what their relationship is like now, but I'd love to see him talk to Meryl Marco, because they, you know, they really created the beginning of all of this together. And I'm not sure how many people out there in the world even know that, you know?
See, this is really cool, because off camera, it's come up many times where people have said, people and I have talked about, we'd love to see him talk to Barbara. And Meryl, again, same thing, again, dream guest for us. somebody who, you know, throws out the perception that maybe been there, done that, don't want to talk about that anymore. I don't necessarily want to talk about the Letterman years. Casey St. Ong was just on the show, who was Dave's assistant for 3 years and then went on to Rosie, and she was the showrunner for Busy Tonight. She did such a good job of saying Meryl is the mother of late night television as we know it today, which I believe, first off, is a compliment of the highest regard, because I do love where late night television has gone. Again, I believe led by Dave and company. But Meryl was the one behind the scenes that was helping to create the sensibility. Again, mother, create. I mean, I Jody, this there is no better way to finish off an episode than, in my opinion, throwing that sentiment out into the ether, because it would be fascinating to hear Dave talk with Barbara, talk with Meryl. There are so many directions that could be gone. I love how much Dave has embraced his... his sensibility has changed and he's become so much more vulnerable. I don't think he would have a problem talking about, you know, where women were in comedy when he started, where they are now, the roles that they played along the way. I mean, the roles that they played within Pants or within these are, Jody, you and I are very similar, man. Holy cow. And even in our first little flourish back and forth, I felt the energy through the devices we were communicating with. I just can't tell you how much I appreciate your enthusiasm, how much care that you had for the presentness that you have about the character that you played, and how special it is to your heart. I think there's going to be a lot of people, again, the dozens who care enough to watch or listen to this show. I think there's going to be a lot of people out there who are, it's like a little bit of a ray of sunshine to know that you didn't just play this role, but this was something that was so personal and special to you. I can't thank you enough for this conversation. I hope you've had a great time.
I have had a great time. And just to finish off,
please,
I'd like to say, fuck you, Mike.
Fuck you. Like, it just came from your feet. You just were so, it just, when you would do it, it would just come right out of you. Inner Belushi makes a lot of sense. WilliamJodyEbert.com is where you find you. The Gmail is there. We're going to put it in the description here. I can't thank you enough. I hope somehow, some way our paths cross again. I certainly want to mention you when we have Jerry on. We're talking with him right now. The Stengels, I think it is a good idea. Thank you for the confirmation. If I can wrangle them somehow together and get them on here at the same time, I think that'd be a lot of fun. Thank you for being you. Thank you for doing this. I'm going to do a quick outro and then, we'll say our goodbye privately, if that's okay with you.
That's totally fine with me, sir.
Oh, man. Well, let's be careful with the sir. Let's use that very, very sparingly, shall we? guys and gals who have supported this thing from the beginning, thank you so much. I can't tell you how gratifying it is to touch this little bit of lightning here, where so many of us from so many different parts of the world feel like this, have these feelings of sentimentality, of honor. Again, to use the phrase that we've used a few times, these people were mining for gold, would find these amazing nuggets, bars of gold, and then they would drop them on the ground because tomorrow was another show and it's time to mine for some more. What we're doing is we're picking up these treasures that were discarded, sometimes never to be seen until Walter and company or Mr. Don Giller have put these things back out again. There's a resurgence. It's happening. We're happy to celebrate it here on the Letterman podcast. I have to say it until I don't have to say it anymore. Please like, share, subscribe, leave a positive comment, do all those things on the show, no matter what denomination or platform that you find it on. We would appreciate that very much. I cannot wait for the time that I don't have to ask for that. And I think it's coming sooner than later. So grateful. My name is Mike Chisholm. Coincidentally, this is the Letterman podcast with Mike Chisholm. Thank you again for tuning in. Thank you and good night.
Overcoat and underpants.